entertainment, sports, and radio's best guest list. Live from the Zone Radio Studios on Broadway on WZON Z62, WKIT HD3, and at downtownwithrichkimble.com. This is Downtown.
Hello there and a good morning to you on this Sunday morning, the 21st day of July. It's the best of Downtown, brought to you by Cross Insurance, where security meets strength. Rich Kimble with you along with Carrie Haskell, our weekly look back at some of our favorite recent conversations. Well, we had a bushel basket of them this week. Lots of great guests. Hard to pick just three, but look, that's the task that we are given each week, and so we did it. We did it just for you. And my goodness, it's an all-star team. Comedy legend Paula Poundstone joins us this morning on the program. Actor William Jackson Harper of the smash NBC series The Good Place, also starring in a very scary, creepy summertime horror film called Midsummer. And director Lynn Shelton, she's one of the bright stars in the independent film scene, has got a brand new one starring Marc Maron entitled Sword of Trust. And we'll talk with her about that all between now and 10 o'clock this morning right here on Z62 Retro Radio. Well, our next guest is a longtime friend of the show, many appearances with us, usually every time she's on her way to Maine, which fortunately for fans of comedy is quite often. She'll be appearing this coming weekend in coastal Maine. You can check her out down in Ogunquit at Jonathan's on Friday and Saturday, or Thursday and Friday, and then on Saturday at the Strand in Rockland. Once again, we welcomed Paula Poundstone back to Downtown. Paula, it's, we believe, your fifth time on the show, which means we get you the decoder ring and we get to teach you the secret handshake.
Oh, man, I'm so proud.
I thought you would be. It's pretty exciting for us as well. I also have a request I was given by the people at the Criterion Theater in Bar Harbor. You're going to be there in September, and they would like to know what kind of cake you like backstage. They want to make you a cake.
Oh, wow, that's nice. That's the thing about Maine. They're cake makers. I enjoy a chocolate cake, you tell them.
All right, chocolate cake. Excellent.
Chocolate cake.
It's yeah. On the way. How are the cats doing?
Cats are great. I'm looking at them right now. Well, I'm looking at not all of them. You know, I have 13. And it's the time of the day where I scrape the parts of the bowl of food that they didn't eat into one bowl. And you would think they had never eaten before. They rush in. I almost get, what's that called, stampeded. I can be caught in a cat stampede over just that. They're great. When somebody invents a useful use for cat pee, I'm going to be the richest person in the world.
Now, do you ever get worried? I know you love them, obviously, but do you ever worry when you see them maybe clustered together in groups of, I don't know, four or five, that perhaps they could be, if not plotting against you, at least talking about you?
I think that, no, I've heard this suggestion. In fact, on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me one time, there was a thing. They had some sort of study that said that your cats would eat you if they had the opportunity. And I just don't think that's true. I don't know. I look into their eyes and I just don't see an animal that would eat me there. I have a lot of squirrels in my backyard. They'd tear me apart if they had the chance.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. You know how squirrels are.
That's why you keep them outside.
Well, they are. I'll tell you, part of the reason they enjoy the out of doors, the squirrels and the rats, are because I have a plum tree and a nectarine tree. And, I'm always so excited when they begin to flower and there's so many flowers on them. And then you can see little nectarines and little plums begin to grow. I don't get one plum or one nectarine. They are all eaten by rats and not rats and squirrels. And they don't eat everyone. They take, because I would gladly split with them 80-20. I'll take the 20 or even 90-10. But they take a bite out of everyone and leave it. And I talked to a pest control guy about if it would be okay to just cut out the rat-eaten part and eat the rest, and he thought not.
Probably not a good idea. No, we're talking to Paula Poundstone here on Downtown. Last time you were on with us, you talked about your track record on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and that you've rarely won. We had Tom Baudet on a couple of months back and asked him about that. Now, he says you could win a lot more, but you'd rather get the laugh. You'd rather have the funny story than actually win.
No, he's totally wrong about that. I'm so glad I get this chance to clear this up. I am desperately trying to win each time. People think I throw the match. I absolutely don't. I have a great Tom Baudette story. I stop me if I've told this before, but one time I was working in Vermont, and Tom and I were on a bill together, and he kindly invited my son and I to stay with him. And so we did, and we went to the show that night, and then we went back to his house, and eventually those guys were tired, and they went up to bed. But, you know, my son and I were on California time, so we're still awake, really. So my son comes into my room, and we watch a DVD of I Love Lucy or something, and, you know, eventually we're like, okay, we should go to bed. And then we realized we didn't know where the light switches were. And so we slept with the lights on at Tom Baudette's house.
That's perfect.
Isn't that great? I mean, I've slept with the lights on in many places, but it was never meaningful in this way.
I like that a lot. That's wonderful. You had Penn Jillette on your podcast, Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, and you guys talked, among other things, about longevity. Is it possible? Is it a key for you and Adam to keep that going? If not for 40 years, then 20 or 30, is it essential for one partner to never speak?
Well, we've already broken that dam. The thing is, I speak so much that it may be the amount that I speak, even though Adam also speaks, may still be more than Penn speaks, even though Teller doesn't. Do you see what I'm saying?
I do, yes.
Yeah, so it may just be, maybe we're focusing on the silence of one partner when really the success has to do with the, you know, loquacity?
Yeah,
is that the right word?
Yeah, I think so, or loquaciousness, or that talkiness, I don't know.
Yeah, precisely. Why should I try to impress myself with vocabulary? I know I can't do it.
Have you become, you travel so much, you're on the road back here in Maine for three shows, Ogunquit, down at Jonathan's July 18th and 19th at the beautiful Strand in Rockland on the 20th, and then back across the country to Walla Walla, Washington. Have you become an expert packer in your years on the road?
Oh, I am a good packer. Yeah, I am a good packer. You put your underwear in your shoes, first of all. That's critical.
Yes, I like that idea.
Yeah, it has to be sort of forced in there. The other thing is, I have two of many things. Like, I haven't for many years packed and unpacked things like toiletries or clothes that I sleep in, or that sort of thing is just left in there all the time. The hardest part of my probably the heaviest part of my suitcase is my recyclables. By the end of a trip, my suitcase is pounds heavier than it was when I left because I take everything that needs to be recycled, I take it home with me. Because I live in the fantasy world that tells me that here in Santa Monica, they actually are recycling things. You know, you never know. Once you put it into the bin, it's not like, you know, you follow it in a maternal fashion. But I don't trust a hotel to do that. You know, hotels are hard to trust. They don't even have shampoos that are labeled in a large font. You don't really know what you're putting on your head in a hotel.
I probably shouldn't say this to somebody who travels as much as you do, but have you seen any of those reports about the hotels where they don't really even change the linens on a regular basis? That's a little scary.
I've long suspected such a thing, but frankly, exhaustion trumps hygiene, I guess. You know, sometimes I've gone in a room and I thought, I wonder. And I'm like, you know what? I'm so damn tired. It hasn't killed me in all these years. It's probably not gonna.
Well, no, it's probably built up your immunities. You may be the healthiest person in America.
You know, I got to say, I am pretty healthy. And it's partly because, I you know, as a comic, you don't get benefits. I'm self-employed. I have the worst boss. And, so I don't have, boy, when she gets that look on her face and says, see me in the office, I know the jig is up. So my health care largely, here's how I get my health care. For example, I don't know, it was a year and a half, 2 years ago. I was having trouble breathing, and I was in a lot of pain, and this went on for months. And finally, what happened was one of my cats had to go to the vet. And when I was at the vet, I asked questions, pretending that it was about an animal at home, but really it was about me. Geez, my dog Ramona seems to have a hard time breathing, and when she does push-ups, she makes a moaning noise. Do you think? Do you think there's reason for concern?
Did they catch on?
By the way, there wasn't. I have to tell you, Ramona just dropped dead one day.
Oh dear.
So it's lucky that I'm still alive, I guess, because my vet skills didn't even go as far as my dog, let alone me.
Gracious. Now, you're traveling all here to Maine. You're back again, as we mentioned. You're going to be back here in September for a couple of shows down at Stone Mountain in Brownfield and then at the Criterion in Bar Harbor. In the past, we thought maybe there was some expert planning on your part that you get here during the most beautiful times of year, but you're a warrior. You come to the Northeast even in the wintertime.
I do. You know, I've always prided myself in, I don't know that I did this last year, but in years past, I have gone during mud season because that's when I feel, you know, that people are the neediest. That's when you really need a good laugh is when, you know, your front room is covered in mud, and then the weather forecast says it's going to snow again.
That's like 5 months out of the year up here.
Yeah, you're due for your April snow.
Mm.
I love Maine. I mean, what's not to love about Maine? I love Maine so much that I have, you know, that kind of furniture that's out in people's front yards and it's in the front of all sorts of. You know, kind of country stores as you drive down the road in Maine.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of furniture that's the bright colors.
Yes, I do.
I have that in my living room.
Oh, I like that very much.
Yeah. What's that called? There's a word for it. Like Adirondacks or something?
Yeah, Adirondack chairs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why did I ask you when I knew? See, that's the thing about me.
Well, no, you were just trying to make me feel like I was more knowledgeable.
I don't always have faith in myself. Sometimes I pull over and ask directions on a straightaway. I'll be on the 405 North and I just pull over and do I just keep going here on the 405? Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
I found a GPS doesn't help me very much because I'm one of those people and it's terrible to do this. I find my way, I guess, by feel, if it's a city I've been to before, and I always
so just
think...
just crashing into stuff?
Pretty much, yes.
Yeah.
I
or you
always
drop your hand out the door?
Always. I just try to get it a little bit ahead of the bumper if I can, but then I seem to have a blind spot over on the right. No, I'm
it's
terrible.
All curb feelers.
I can't find... You know, and I realize what it is. It took me, I don't know, 30 or 40 years to figure it out, that it's because I don't really pay attention when I'm going someplace new. Some people will look at landmarks and remember, oh, I turned left at that store by the big red barn or whatever it is. But I don't do that. And so if I have to retrace my steps, I'm lost completely.
Yeah, nobody does it anymore because of GPS. But in the old days, yeah, you did. You made an actual effort to pay attention to where you were. You know, there's a commercial for, I think it's Subaru. I can't swear to it. But where this couple goes into a store and they ask for a map to they ask if they have a map to like the Eagle's Perch and there's a blind guy in the back of the store and he goes, you won't find a map for that. And then in the next scene the blind guy is in the car with this couple, which just strikes me as unsafe in every way. He's in the car with this couple and they're driving and he's saying, make a left, make a right, you know, just wait, stop, there's a bunny there. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, does this guy come with every car? It's a very strange ad. It's really hard to understand what the upside is of the Subaru.
It's a unique feature of the Subaru. I have one. I didn't get my blind guy. I need to go talk to the dealer, I think.
Yeah, it's a blind man, but it's also a blind man who had this like very strong understanding. Of where the road turned, like how you did. He just did it by feel. you know.
Well, you know what they
say. You could come with a Subaru. That's why you didn't get a guy like that, because that's you.
Well, you know, they say if you lose one sense, the others are heightened. So maybe in his case, it's navigational skills.
You know, they say that, but I don't know if that's actually true. Helen Keller went through some sort of study. She believed that she had a better sense of feel than other people had. Like just touch, a
right.
better sense of touch, because her hands were so important. And I don't know, she went through some sort of process. I forget the details of it, unfortunately, but, you know, which makes it sound shady when I say it. But she went through some sort of test to see if that was true, and it turned out that it wasn't. And by the way, she was very disappointed.
Well,
because I think she thought, you know, geez, I want to excel at, you know, at something here. And of course, she did excel at all sorts of things, but she wanted her hands to be, you know, extraordinary.
It's not quite the same thing, but
the difference is, I don't know that anything else gets. It's just that if you don't have one thing, you rely on the other things mm-hmm. more. It doesn't mean that they sharpen as a result of relying on them.
Right. I always thought
I hate to dispute your science, but that's what I read.
Well, no,
I only have one source on that, by the way. It was one book that I read it in.
I learned that myself because I thought being such a bad dancer, I would naturally be a really good singer, and that didn't work out either.
That's how I've always felt about sex. And it's not even that I'm good or bad at sex. I simply don't have sex. And so I thought for sure that... you know, my croquet would be like, you know, just I'd hit the ball once and it would go through hoops and then turn and go through other hoops. That's what I thought.
And that didn't pan out?
Hasn't. I haven't really focused on my croquet career. But did you see yesterday the pictures of the flyboard going over the Bastille Day event?
I did not.
It looked like Mr. Robinson from Lost in Space, except for he's standing on a board. It's a device that flew.
Wow.
I mean, unless I fell for some sort of a trick, it certainly looked that way. And let me just say, I know the people were trying to decide what kind of cake to get me. And I know a lot of audience members, you know, wonder, oh, what should we get for Paula? And I knew you guys were probably thinking, you know, gift can we give her?
Of course.
And I just, you know, as opposed to telling you, like, my jean sizes, I want you to know, I want a flyboard more than anything in the world.
Carrie just called it up here in studio. We're looking at the picture of the flyboard. I want one of those, too.
I get mine first, because I asked. Is it maybe you guys could have a thing at your station where I call in and I win it?
I mean, I grew up watching the Jetsons. I expected all of this by now.
Yeah, that's amazing. Watching the video of it, that is right out of Lost in Space.
I mean, with the exception maybe of, you know, the ocean or outer space. George Orwell was prescient to a frightening degree, you know, just like, whoa, boy, called that, didn't he? But the Jetsons, you know, you figure, well, George Orwell is a genius. Okay.
Right.
So you expect him to know a little something, but I don't think Hanna-Barbera, they were geniuses exactly. But boy, they did come up with stuff like the whole thing of shopping on a screen. When you used to go through Disney World, I think it was, had the Monsanto exhibit where you'd sort of see things in the future, and one of the things was a woman shopping on a computer. And I what they didn't say when they showed it was that would bring down the whole world. That would be part of the end of the world, you know, because it's not just jobs, although that's important. It's also Who do you have those little exchanges that sort of oil your day in a way that you're not even paying attention to? You know, those little exchanges. You know, you know what I mean? When you're a clerk at a grocery store or something where you go, oh, my God, it's hot out. You know, oh, how's your day? I'm getting by. You know, how are the kids, right? Just, you usually have kids with you. Oh, yeah, yeah, well, they're grown now. Those little exchanges are so important to us, and we're forgetting about. I think every day should look like the opening scene of Beauty and the Beast. Just people walking around going, bonjour, bonjour, bonjour. When we do, see, this is where maybe the Jetsons has steered us wrong. if we do all of our shopping over computer, we're going to become way too isolated. It's already happening, and people, you know, speak of, you know, there's a high rates of depression and suicide, and a lot of that is because they're not saying hi to the clerk at the grocery store.
Yeah. Those little human interactions throughout your day, you don't think of them, but they are really important to maintaining a connection.
They really are. And they've already, I mean, we've already lost so much of it in the same way that sea level rise, like, you know, people aren't like focused on it the way they should be, but slowly but surely. Because, like, for example, I walk a couple days a week. I walk about a mile and a half to a nursing home where I volunteer, and then I walk about a mile and a half back. And I say hi to people when I walk, and they all have those things in their ears, and then they glower at me because I interrupted their music or their phone conversation. Sometimes you can't even see the things in their ears, which is why I say something, because I don't realize there's a thing in their ear. In an airport sometimes, people are looking right at me, walking straight towards me, talking. And so I say, hey, how you doing? Good to see you. Because they assume they're talking to me.
Right.
And then they walk by and glower at me because they have that stupid Bluetooth thing. I think there should be a law that if someone's going to wear that Bluetooth thing for the phone, they have to have a vacant, no vacant sign coming out of their head.
I love that plan. Paula, thank you so much. Always a delight to talk with you. Safe travels on your way here to Maine.
Thanks a lot, you guys. Take care.
Paula Poundstone here on the Best of Downtown for your Sunday morning. When we return, Chidi from The Good Place, actor William Jackson Harper, next on Z62 Retro Radio.
At Quirk Motor City, you get a huge selection of quality pre-owned vehicles priced to fit any budget. Plus, the Quirk Motor City pre-owned difference, with a limited warranty that's 3 times longer than the average dealer's pre-owned warranty. Free main state inspections for the life of the vehicle. A free Carfax vehicle history report. And Quirk Motor City's certified pre-owned 118-point inspection. It's your quality pre-owned car. Find it at Quirk Motor City in Bangor, Belfast, Augusta, and Portland. View our pre-owned inventory online at quirkauto.com.
Since its founding in 1954, Cross Insurance has grown from a small family-owned agency that started in Bangor, Maine, into one of the largest super-regional insurance agencies in New England. With a network of offices throughout New England, Cross Insurance works with top carriers to provide maximum value to you, your family, and your business. We are proud to be the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots and would welcome the chance to provide security for your team. For more information, visit crossinsurance.com. Cross Insurance, where security meets strength.
Pretty sure this should be considered a public service announcement. So in advance, you're welcome. I just went to the Ground Round in Bangor and had the most amazing food from their special menu. First, I got the Reuben Egg Rolls, which is all the flavors of the classic Reuben sandwich wrapped in a crispy egg roll and served with savory garlic smoky paprika sauce that has this slight kick. It's so good. To go with it, I ordered the Memphis Fries, French fries loaded with pulled pork, drizzled with barbecue sauce, topped with chopped pickles and diced onions. If your mouth is watering right now, head to the Ground Round on Audlin Road in Bangor, groundround.com.
Success. For some, it's the result of luck. For the Maine Black Bears, it's the result of planning, determination, and hard work. Success may have brought you financial rewards, and now in many ways, life isn't simpler, it's more complex. Your choices impact more people and can have longer lasting effects than ever before. At ClearPoint Financial, we understand your challenges. We can help navigate today's changing financial landscape and help you pursue your financial goals. ClearPoint Financial, the official financial advisor of the Maine Black Bears.
Hi, this is Mike Toole. See what ClearPoint Financial can do for you. Call us today at 307-7718.
Back on the Best of Downtown. So I said to Carrie, what do we have that's Swedish? We couldn't think of anything other than ABBA. They're too sweet. Something a little bit darker. So ABBA's Frida. seem to fill the bill for our next guest on the program. You know Will Jackson Harper from his role as Chidi in the acclaimed series The Good Place on NBC, wrapping up its fourth and final season coming this fall. But he also stars in one of the most talked about films of the summer, a horror film set in Sweden that is the darkest thing you have ever seen. It's just beyond creepy. It's called Midsummer. And we had a chance to catch up with William Jackson Harper to talk about Midsummer, The Good Place, and a couple other projects he's working on. Thanks so much for coming back on with us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I saw Midsummer last Friday. I don't think I've had a good night's sleep since then. Man, what an intense film that is.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty intense and disturbing for me. And, I mean, I was there. You know, I was in it. And so it's pretty intense.
Now, had you seen Heredity before you decided to make this film?
I had, yeah. As a matter of fact, that was a large part of why I wanted to be in this film so badly. I saw Hereditary as easily one of the best movies of last year, and definitely one of my top five horror movies of all time. So I was super, super excited that the opportunity came up, and I feel like Hereditary had a lot to do with my excitement for being in this movie.
Well, Midsummer is so good, and yes, it absolutely scares you. It stays with you. But I also like the fact that there's a fair amount of humor in this film.
Yeah, yeah. It's Ari's a twisted dude. So, in the midst of all this, really intense, very, very dark, yet at the same time, very bright energy, he throws in some very, very inappropriate and gross and very dark humor, which I think honestly probably contributes to this sort of the dread, because it's I think when things are sort of inadvertently funny in the midst of something terrible, it gives you a second to sort of breathe, but it's also just sort of makes the experience feel a little bit more like something that could happen because of how random it is,
Now, your character, Josh, without giving too much away, is it safe to say, makes a couple of bad decisions along his journey?
Yeah, yeah. it's a horror film. We all make choices we shouldn't be making,
It could have been worse. Others made even more damaging choices, I guess, than yours. First of all, be careful where you pee, I think, is a good lesson.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Great lesson. Maybe just just go deep in the woods. If you can't, if you can't find a toilet, just go deep, deep, deep in the woods and you should be fine. But, it's never safe to pee in plain sight with any other people, I don't think. So, that would have been a mistake, regardless of what happens in this film.
Now, I've got what I think is a long way to go until I get there, but I'm all of a sudden not that eager to turn 72.
Yeah. No, well, me either. I got a ways to go through.
What did you know about the finished product? Did you have much of an inkling what it was going to be like until you sat down and actually watched it as a cast? And were you surprised by anything?
Yeah, I think I was actually surprised by, first off, I had no idea what the movie was going to look like. I mean, I know how we shot it and, I know when we shot it. So I knew that a lot of it was going to take place in the daytime. There was going to be a lot of there's going to be a lot of cognitive dissonance about what horror should be and, what we'll be seeing on the screen. I figured that would happen, but I wasn't sure what that would actually feel like. And I really had no idea what to expect. I was surprised by how funny it was. I was also just sort of, it was emotionally very, very terrorizing for me. I think that, the relationship between Christian and Danny is just so incredibly fraught and real in a way that I just hadn't quite seen. And I think that is something that I really took away from the movie that was one of the most salient moments for me, outside of, the more, ceremonial bloodletting moments that the movie has.
Sometimes movies just capture a moment in time, and I don't know what it is, but obviously the reviews have been outstanding for the film, a great box office as well. What have you tapped into in this film that's got people not only seeing it, but seeing it multiple times, talking about it with friends? There's so much buzz, probably more than any other non-Toy Story film this summer.
Well, I think that, it's a movie that doesn't necessarily lean into the idea of what horror movies are supposed to be. And I think that that's sort of fascinating for people to watch. I think that there's a lot of grotesque imagery that is really carefully rendered, which I think is, something that people really get into for whatever reason. I mean, it's hard for me to watch, but I know that people really like seeing people's faces get smashed and all sorts of stuff like that. And I can't handle it, but people like it. But I think that it's also got a certain depth to it, I think, regarding the relationships. I think that, in particular, again, with Christian and Danny, those two characters, I think it reflects a lot of, a dynamic that I think a lot of people find themselves in, perhaps not to that degree, but definitely there's a twinge of that in a lot of relationships. And so I think that there's something about, exercising that particular demon when you go and watch this movie. It's about belief for me. I think that, that's one of those things that, you can't reason people away from something that is a part of their very early indoctrination. And that is a really frightening thing to face. And I feel like we are in a time where, there's a lot of indoctrination that is occurring and that has occurred, and conditioning that is sort of making people behave a certain way. And, the sort of inevitability of what those people who have been indoctrinated that way, the choices they will make, I think that that's something that is a little frightening. And I think that there's, a possibility that we need to see that happen in order to sort of shake ourselves awake a bit, but that's more for just me, being a pointy head dude and just overthinking things.
We're talking with William Jackson Harper. Also, of course, we can't forget to talk about The Good Place Season 4 coming up. Michael Schur has announced this will be the final season. I'm torn. I hate to see the characters go because I love the show so much. But I also love the idea that it's coming to a resolution. Is it mixed feelings for cast members as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we all love each other a lot. And we have been able to come together for the last 4 years, every summer for a few months, and just, hang out and make this show that makes people laugh and makes us laugh. And it's been sort of nice to have that sort of thing built in, as a structure for my life, And, it is time to end it. I think that, now it gets to exist as a piece of art as opposed to just a delivery device for advertising. Right. We're not going to overstay our welcome. We're going to tell the story that we actually wanted to tell and get out. And the thing is, it's like the show will, be available on streaming services long after we've gone, and people will be able to just go through and just watch the whole thing and have a good time. And so it's sad for us to be ending it, but I think this is the right thing, because I'd rather go out people, enjoying the show and actually being involved in the story rather than, having us, sort of jump the shark and, everyone just hates the show and then eventually we just kind of fizzle out and go away.
Well, and a lot to resolve here in this final season, because it's tabula rasa. Everything has been erased. Nobody knows anybody. So there's that whole dynamic with Chidi and Eleanor. My wife wants to know if there will be any more scenes of you with your shirt off. I don't know what that's about.
Me either. Because, if there's anything I don't want to do, it's to try to get in shape to get my shirt off again. you know, I'm almost 40 years old. Like, that's not the way I'm supposed to look. That's terrible. I don't want to do that anymore. I want to relax. So, yeah. So, like, so far, I've been able to, like, keep my clothes on, but we'll see. Who knows? You know, maybe they'll punish me at some point this year.
Also, a couple other things I want to mention quickly. You've got a film in production directed by Todd Haynes. It looks great, based on the DuPont chemical controversy. Anne Hathaway, Tim Robbins, Bill Pullman. That looks fantastic.
Yeah. And I don't know how I got in there. I mean, I'm hoping that they don't, like, discover my footage somewhere and it's like, oh, dude, this guy sneaked in. Like, we should just cut him out. Yeah, it's an incredibly. I think it's an incredibly important film. It deals with the corporate defense attorney who wound up actually fighting DuPont for poisoning the water in this West Virginia town. And you know, I think it's something that, you know, it's sort of like it's a wake up call for, like, what it actually takes to affect social change. And it's just great, and this cast is amazing, and I feel so lucky that I get to be a part of it. And I it's one of those scripts where I was intending to read it. Like, I got home one night late, and I was okay, well, I got this script, I should read half of it tonight, I'll read half tomorrow because it's just too late and I'm not going to be able to get through this whole thing. And then I just sat up till 4 a.m. and just bombed through the whole thing without moving, because it's just that good. And it was just that engrossing to me. So, we'll see how it all turns out. But I'm really excited for people to see that movie.
And joining the cast of Amazon's Jack Ryan as Xander for season two.
Yeah. I hope, you know, there's so much that they keep under wraps, because it's a mystery. You know, there's a lot of intrigue, and everything is kind of functional on a need-to-know basis, but I think I'm a good guy. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. I actually got to hang out with John Krasinski on set quite a bit. Another alumni of the Sureverse,
right?
As people like to call it. And so, it was fun. They had been all over the place. They had been, like, in South America and Russia, and I just, you know, got a hold of them in New York. So they were all, like, just very well traveled and very, very tired. And I just had biked over the Manhattan Bridge to go to work. So, you know, it was fun. It was really great for me. But I'm sure they were exhausted.
Before we let you go, when we talked with you last summer, you were getting ready to stage your play Travisville at Ensemble Studio Theater. Any other stage work coming up for you?
Not at the moment. Actually, Travisville is getting published, which I'm really, really excited about. So, you know, hopefully it'll make its way, you know, across theaters, you know, in the country, hopefully. No theater on the docket as of yet. It's something I hope to get back to. As far as writing, you know, that was one of those things that really ate my lunch. That was a beating. And, you know, thankfully I had a really great cast and director and theater that really propped me up. But, I don't want to poke that particular bear anytime soon. I'll probably just stick to being the last on, first off, you know, like a good actor should be.
Well, Will, congratulations on the success of Midsummer. We wish you a great final season of The Good Place. If there's any justice, there'll be an Emmy nomination soon. And thanks again for visiting with us today.
Oh, well, thank you. Thanks for having me again.
That's Will Jackson Harper from The Good Place and Midsummer here on Downtown. The Best of Show on a Sunday morning. We'll return with acclaimed director Lynn Shelton and talk about her new film, Sword of Trust, next on Z62.
When it comes to your health, early detection is the best protection. That's why the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center provides 3D mammography to offer better answers and greater peace of mind, identifying problem areas that a standard mammogram might miss. It provides precise images for all women, including those with dense breast tissue. Call 907-1682 to schedule your 3D mammogram at the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center. 3D, providing peace of mind for you, your family, and your loved ones.
Bennett Auto Center is the place to go for full-service auto care. From oil changes to engine jobs, they can handle your every need. Stop in at 24 Thatcher Street in Bangor and talk with the experienced local people at Bennett's. They offer great service, competitive prices on a wide range of tires, and best of all, people you can trust. Visit the website for more information at BennettAutoCenter.com. Give them a call at 947-0351 or drive on into Bennett Auto Center, 24 Thatcher Street, Bangor.
Hi, this is Eric.
And Christine.
From the Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, inviting you to come experience everything that we have to offer.
Sure, you already know we have the most expertly cultivated selection of fine wine, craft beer, meads, and ciders in the region.
But have you tried our wide variety of cheeses, cured meats, and gourmet goods? Our exclusive line of Tavolo specialty oils and vinegars, now featuring apple cider vinegar and organic sunflower seed oil made right here in Maine? Our olive bar, and don't miss the crusty baguettes.
We can put it all together in a brilliant platter or gift basket packaged with locally made wine and cheese accessories.
And while our selection is impressive, most importantly, know that we offer the service and knowledge to help anyone from the seasoned buyer to the nervous newcomer.
Bangor Wine and Cheese, family owned and operated since 2000, is located at 86 Hammond Street in the heart of downtown Bangor.
Come in, let us cater to you and discover why we say drink, eat, live better.
Since its founding in 1954, Cross Insurance has grown from a small family-owned agency that started in Bangor, Maine, into one of the largest super-regional insurance agencies in New England. With a network of offices throughout New England, Cross Insurance works with top carriers to provide maximum value to you, your family, and your business. We are proud to be the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots and would welcome the chance to provide security for your team. For more information, visit crossinsurance.com. Cross Insurance, where security meets strength.
Hey, we're back on the Best of Downtown Sunday morning. Rich Kimball, Carrie Haskell here with you. Did you know the South actually won the Civil War? Conspiracy to keep that quiet. I bet Charlie Daniels knows about it.
Well, the train, the grinder switch is running right on time, and the Tucker boys are cooking down in Carolina. People down in Florida can't be still when Leonard Skinner's picking down in Jacksonville. People down in Georgia come from near and far to hear Richard Best picking on that red guitar. So gather round, now gather round, chill and be down. Well, just get down, chill and get loud. Well, you can be loud, yeah, and be proud. And you can be proud, yeah, and I'll be proud. Well, because South's gonna do it again.
The South winning the Civil War is the subplot of a brand new movie from filmmaker Lynn Shelton. She co-wrote it along with Mike O'Brien, has a role in it as well. It stars Marc Maron as a pawn shop owner who has a couple of customers bring in a sword they claim is proof that the Confederates actually won the Civil War. It's a funny and also at times a very poignant movie called Sword of Trust. And we talked about the making of it with director Lynn Shelton. Hi, Lynn. How are you?
I'm good, Rich. How are you?
I am wonderful. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's been a quest. We've been trying to get you for a long time. I've been such a fan of your work for so many years, and this new movie is just absolutely wonderful. Everything about it, the cast, the direction, the writing, the cinematography, kudos on just a wonderful movie.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. I like it. I like that kind of enthusiasm. Very nice to hear.
Well, the cast is great, and I wonder, so much of your work is done through improvisation. Do you look for people who are comfortable with working in an improvisational setting?
Oh, for sure. There are lots of actors. Some of my favorite actors on earth are not great improvisers, and that's totally fine. They have another kind of magic, which is to take the written word and turn it into something that it seems like a real person would say. But I knew that I needed a very carefully curated cast to pull this movie off. And that cast had to include people, every single one of whom had to be able to, find their way to the beats of the scene. They really are. It's a very special brain. You know, it's somebody who is able to create an emotionally truthful performance and a real well-rounded character, but also is a writer, you know, to some degree, and is able to just like let words come out of their mouths that is appropriate to the scenario. And if it can also elicit a little laughter, all the better in this case anyway.
Well, casting is perfect in this. And, of course, it starts with Marc Maron. You'd worked with him on Glow, on his series. I think you'd done a comedy special with him. But when did you know you wanted to make a film with Marc?
I knew I wanted to make a film with Marc the first time I directed him on his show, Maron. So that was back in 2000, very beginning of 2016, because I met him in 2015, almost 4 years ago, exactly 4 years ago, on his WTF podcast. And he kind of hired me on the spot, asked me if I would direct his TV show his last season. And I said, yeah, no problem. I'd love to. And it was a very vulnerable kind of moment in the scope of the series for his character, because he had fallen off the wagon. Mm. His character had fallen off the wagon, and he'd lost everything. And he was hitting rock bottom in the first episode of that show, that season. And then he ends up going into rehab. And, you know, he was giving himself acting challenges that he had never done before, you know, and he really learned how to act in that show that he created for himself. So the first season, the difference between his acting performance in the first season compared to the fourth season is kind of remarkable, because he just taught himself how to act. And he ended up being, by the time I worked with him, it was like, wow, this guy, he was still a little raw in terms of his talent, but man, did he have a lot to give. And he really understood how to engage and how to listen and how to make himself available emotionally. And I just saw untapped depths there that I wanted to see myself and I wanted the world to see. So I asked him if he would collaborate with me on something. And we actually started to write a script for another movie. And it just was so slow going, because I don't think he ever really understood that as soon as we had a script, I would make it, you know, but he'd never been through that process before. So he just kept kind of being very lackadaisical about it. And I finally said, look, I really want to get on set with you again. And I really want to put you at the center of a movie. And he said, well, if you write another movie, you know, on your own, I'll do it. And so I did. I just came to him a few months later. And I was like, okay, it's done. Give me your 2 weeks that you promised me, you know, we're going to go make this movie. And he couldn't believe it.
I love his podcast. Yeah, you've been on a couple of times. I think it's the best podcast out there. He's such a good interviewer, and that starts with his ability to listen. And I have to think, well, obviously for any actor, that's a great skill, as you mentioned, but particularly if you're doing a lot of improvisation, listening is just going to make you live in that moment so much more.
That is absolutely correct. And I just did a press tour with him in New York, and listening to him talk about that very thing, how the podcast is what kind of enabled him to learn how to act. Because he had to learn how to listen, and he had to learn how to give somebody else, you know, stage time, to, you know, so to speak, metaphorically. Because his, you know, first and foremost, he is a comic. He stands on stage and he takes full ownership of that space, and he's responsible for filling the void with his own words. And he's not used to playing well with others. You know, he doesn't come from the Groundlings or UCB or any kind of comedy improv scenario where you're being generous with, you know, letting other people kind of have their jazz solos, you know. He was just the soloist himself. So doing that podcast really, really enacted, you know, it sort of activated brand new skills for him. And he really had to learn how to listen and to let other people talk. And that enabled him to, it turned out to be really good groundwork for acting, as you say.
I read an interview recently, may have been on the New York tour, where he talked about the fact that he wasn't aware of the camera. And that's, yeah. I think you said, wow, what a gift that is to have that, to be so locked in with your scene partner that you forget about the camera.
Well, it is. And I've worked with a lot of folks who can't help but be aware of it, you know, and who are just so self-conscious about the fact that it's right there in their faces. And he has this really weird, beautiful ability to just shut all that out, and not just the camera, but the whole crew. You know, it's such an artificial setting. I mean, making a movie is a really, and TV shows, it's such a strange way of working, because, you know, I always say everybody is working their ass off on set, but nobody has a harder job than the actor. And the good ones make it seem like breathing. They make it seem so easy, but it's really difficult to just completely shut out the weird lights, and all these weird people standing around staring at you, you know, and all the equipment, and to just home in on who you're talking to and what's going on emotionally in the scene, and then make yourself, you know, available emotionally. It's not an easy gig at all, and it's really kind of magical when somebody can make it work.
We're talking with Lynn Shelton about her wonderful new movie, Sword of Trust. Laugh out loud, funny, but the scenes that stand out to me are a couple of very poignant scenes, and one is early in the film when your character arrives. Were you reluctant at all to cast yourself in that role?
I was very reluctant, and I blame my co-writer, Mike O'Brien. Mike O'Brien is an amazing performer, but he's really made a living recently as a writer, but he never wanted to give up performing, and he just assumed I was the same way, because I started out as an actor, and then I really turned my attention to directing, and, you know, I love acting, but truth be told, I'd be happy to just direct the rest of my life and never act again, you know, but he just kept insisting that I had to take a role in the movie. And I kept saying, no, I'm not going to be in the movie, Mike. And I finally relented because he wouldn't let go of it. And I thought I was just going to be a random, very, you know, kind of like a tiny little cameo of just somebody who comes in. Like there's a character in the movie that comes in to pick up a coat that she pawned earlier. And I thought that was going to be me. I thought I would be doing something like that. But then I realized that, and I said, well, you know, I have always wanted to play a junkie, and I could imagine that somebody strung out coming in and wanting to, you know, pawn something so they could get drugs. So I thought, well, I'll be that. It'll be fun, you know. And then I realized that as we were writing the script, we needed some way to track Mel's emotional arc through the film. Mm-hmm. Mel is the character that Mark plays. And I realized that maybe this was an opportunity that her character could be a way to do that. And she wouldn't really have to show up in the movie more than just one real scene. And then another point, he sees her from a distance, but mostly she's just referred to, you know, after that, she does never have to be seen again. And so we just ended up incorporating her into giving her more weight.
Well, it's great.
And I was really happy to be able to do that, because I actually had a really wonderful time acting with Mark, and that was just sort of a gift that I wasn't expecting.
and it raises the emotional stakes and sets up that wonderful scene. And I have to say, it's the first time I can think of in a film where you had an incredible monologue delivered in the back of a box truck.
Yeah, and what's really amazing is that there were some scenes in that movie that were, I mean, the plot was really tightly structured, and there were many scenes, like the Mel Deirdre scene actually was pretty well written out, honestly. It was loose the way we approached it, but it really was, you know, a lot of those lines were written. The back of the van scene, which is arguably the heart of the whole movie, it says in the script, they get to know each other in the back of the van. And then we spent an entire day, you know, figuring out what that scene was going to be. Now, everybody coming into by the time they came to set, they really had a strong sense of who their characters were and what their backstories were. So a lot of that groundwork had been done previously, but all the little details that get filled in, you know, were happening on the day. You know, Mark comes up with all these details that he brings in from the time he spent in his youth in the Lower East Side of Manhattan. And he, you know, refers to specific restaurants and just he sort of paints this picture in his head, this built memory that is not his own. You know, he sort of pictured himself, and he remembered all of these folks on heroin in amongst the, you know, people that he was living with and living in that neighborhood with. And he just kind of like inserted this character's experience into that group of folks. And it really, it's kind of insane what he does. It's a kind of an alchemy that he creates. It's just beautiful.
One of your executive producers is Joe Swanberg, who's been on our show. We love his work. Mark Duplass is a great friend of ours who's been on a bunch of times. And you guys are labeled as people in the mumblecore genre. To me, that's always been an odd name for it, because I look at what's out there in the world of cinema, particularly in the summertime, and it's a lot of comic books and a lot of stuff blowing up. And I look at the movies that you make, that Joe makes, that Mark makes, as movies for grown-ups and not mumblecore.
Yeah, totally agreed. Yes, and it's a pretty annoying at this point term, you know, that just kind of rankles a little bit. And I definitely think that whatever made that, you know, whoever came up with that moniker and whatever gave us that label is pretty tired by now, because, you know, it basically the only thing that was bringing us all together at the time where we were making, we weren't waiting for permission for other people, you know, from other people to make our films. It was very DIY. We just sort of grabbed cameras and grabbed friends and made movies. And we all got sort of, it was nice to be actually put together into a little bit of a movement, because I think it put more of a spotlight on all of our little films that would have been harder to shine had they just been coming out, you know, individually. But the name itself is so annoying, because I don't, you know, there's nobody mumbling in my movies.
No,
ever.
No.
So in any of ours, really, for that matter. So sort of a cute little thing that somebody, you know, sort of latched onto. But yeah, I think we're well beyond that label for sure. You know, even if it never, whether it fit or not at the time, it certainly doesn't anymore. You know, we've, the scope of our films and the variety of approaches and budgets has long, you know, sort of left that behind, I think.
Well, I love the films you did with Mark Humpday. Your Sister's Sister was so wonderful. The film you did with Jay Duplass. And I guess I go back to improvisation, and in improv, the best humor comes out of truth and it comes out of reality. And it seems like the consistent thread in all of your films, Lynn, real people placed in somewhat extraordinary situations.
I would have to agree. That's true. I actually had somebody say to me the other night after a screening that she believes that comedy is empathy. And I was floored by that, because I really immediately saw what she meant. You know, she said, I really get a big belly laugh only when I feel like I recognize the people on the screen, which is exactly what I'm aiming for. You know, I want to create real people that you really care about, because you see their humanity, you know, and you feel their humanity, and that is empathy, you know, right there. So that's where the sort of full-bellied laughter, organic laughter comes from. And the thing that's nice about improvisation is that it creates a sensibility on the screen that's very dynamic, because you literally have no idea what each person is going to be saying. You know, it wasn't predetermined. And that's because that's how it was on the set, you know. And so there's a full engagement with the actors, each with the other, because you have to be really listening, because you don't know what the other person is going to be saying. And no matter, you know, you're always suspending your disbelief when you're working with a predetermined script, because you know exactly what the person is going to say next, you know, after you say your line, and you have to pretend you don't know, you know, and that's a hard road to toe. So if you really don't know what they're going to be saying, it's a lot easier to just like stay completely engaged and, you know, and really just tune in, you know, with all of your senses. And that comes across, I think, on screen.
It sure does. Well, Sword of Trust, it's everything I look for in a movie. It's smart, it's funny, it's poignant, and it's very, very honest. Lynn, I'm a big fan of your work. Congratulations on this terrific film. And thank you so much for spending some time with us.
Oh, Rich, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. Glad it finally happened.
Lynn Shelton on her film Sword of Trust. Check it out if you get the chance. It is absolutely terrific. Thanks to Lynn, William Jackson Harper of The Good Place and Midsummer, and the great Paula Poundstone appearing next weekend at Jonathan's and Ogunquit and at The Strand in Rockland, and then later, early fall, September, down at the Criterion in Bar Harbor, too. And thanks to you for joining us on this Sunday morning. Hey, we're back tomorrow. Good week coming up. Ken Burns going to be with us on Thursday to preview his new documentary series, Country Music, that premieres in September on PBS. But before that, lots of good stuff tomorrow. Chad Finn of the Boston Globe talking sports media and the Boston sports scene. Alan Adams with movie reviews. Casey Rush from Acadia Community Theater on their production of A Midsummer Night's Dream. And another of downtown's greatest hits, as the great Don McLean talks about his greatest hit, American Pie, making of that. All tomorrow at 4, right here on Z62 Retro Radio. You're gonna